It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast. Here we go. With Malia Jacobson as your host.
Hello, and welcome to Sleep Well, Stay Well. I'm your host, sleep and health journalist Malia Jacobson. I hope you're doing well. I am here in Washington State where it is sunny for a change. I can hear birds chirping outside. It really feels like spring is on the horizon. And we are still in the month of February and continuing our Better Sleep for Couples series. Today we're talking about restless leg syndrome and its effect not only on the person with the restless legs, but on the person sharing the bed with those legs, their partner. Restless leg syndrome is a common neurological disorder. It affects up to 14% of the population. As a journalist covering sleep, I'm really interested in the intersection of health and family life, how our health affects not only our own well-being, but also those around us. In Western culture, we are very individualistic and we think of ourselves as our own little islands, especially when it comes to our health and our self-care. In fact, families and even communities are interconnected systems, and our health really impacts those around us, and especially in the case of a disorder like restless leg syndrome. So I set out looking for a researcher to comment on this topic, and sometimes the stars align and I'm able to find someone working right at the intersection of the topics I want to explore, and that's what happened in this case. My guest is RLS Foundation Scientific and Medical Advisory Board member and RLS expert, Dr. William Ondo. He's the author of a study on the exact topic that we're discussing today, RLS and its impact on the patient as well as their partner. His 2017 study titled Restless Leg Syndrome, Patient Odyssey, Survey of Disease Burden on Patients and Spouses or Partners was published in the journal Sleep Medicine. He's also the director of movement disorders at Methodist Neurological Institute in Houston, Texas. He has lots of expertise to share with us, so let's get him on the line. Welcome, Dr. Ondo. Thank you so much for being with us today.
All right, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, before we get into your study, I wanted to talk a little bit about the disorder itself. Can you share about just what is restless leg syndrome for the listeners? What are its symptoms? Who is most likely to experience it? Is it something that's underdiagnosed? And is it more common in men or women? And that kind of thing.
Sure. Restless legs is a fairly common condition. Okay. It does affect women somewhat more than men, although the results vary in different studies. It is defined by an urge to move the legs, which occurs when you're at rest or sedentary, and also occurs more at night. So most commonly when you're going to bed and trying to relax, then you'll get this very difficult to describe sensation in the legs that makes you want to get up and move. If you do get up and move, you get improvement, at least transiently. And that's basically what makes the definition of restless legs. It's diagnosed exclusively on interview. There's no test for restless legs. If you do sleep studies on someone with restless leg syndrome, the vast majority of them will have kicking while they're actually asleep, but that's not part of the diagnostic criteria. Because it's a subjective disease, it historically has been a little bit vague as far as diagnosis. You know, physicians like a lab result or something like that, and that really doesn't exist in RLS. But it is a very, very common condition, and it does have actually fairly good treatment, so it's something which should not be missed.
All right, and so the urge to move the legs outside of sleep, so when you're awake or trying to fall asleep, is actually a key component of this, not just, you know, your partner's kicking you at bed during the night. That doesn't necessarily indicate restless leg syndrome. This desire to move the legs outside of sleep is a bigger part of it. Am I understanding that correctly?
Correct. The diagnosis is predicated on the subjective feeling that makes you want to kick your legs. Like I said, most people do actually kick them when they're asleep, but there are other conditions that cause leg kicking at sleep that are not restless leg syndrome.
Okay, and what are those? Because I do think that this is a disorder that can be confused with other disorders. As you mentioned, the diagnostic process can be a little bit different than what people expect.
Well, the actual leg kicking at night is called periodic limb movements of sleep. Now, PLMS is not at all uncommon. In fact, in the general population, as we get older, more and more people get PLMS without any other particular reason. So by age 75, maybe a quarter of people out there, if you do a sleep study, will have periodic limb movements of sleep. So RLS is certainly associated with periodic limb movements of sleep, but other neurologic diseases like Parkinson's disease and other degenerative conditions also are associated with periodic limb movements of sleep. And again, for some people, there's just really no clear reason. There are some genes that have been determined that increase your risk for both restless leg syndrome and for periodic limb movements of sleep. And some of those are the same genes. So clearly there's some overlap between RLS and PLMS, but technically they're not the same thing.
Okay, got it. And we were talking about the diagnostic process for RLS. Does someone need to get a sleep study for this? Or you mentioned it's diagnosed primarily on interview.
And many people do get sleep studies to secure a diagnosis of RLS, but honestly, it's really based on interview. Technically, you don't even really need to do an examination of a patient, so it could even be done on telemedicine. It just involves old-fashioned talking to the person.
Okay, got it. So your study, the Patient Odyssey Survey, highlights the impact of RLS not only on a patient's quality of life, but also on their relationships, and I think that's very unique. Before we talk about your findings, can you talk about why you wanted to explore this topic?
Sure. There have been a number of studies on quality of life in restless legs. These are usually done through what we call tertiary referral centers like myself, people that are experts in restless legs, and they're patients that come to a specialty center. So those tend to be biased towards very severe patients that have seen a number of other doctors first. So the information is, there's some bias to this information from traditional based studies looking at severity of disease. Now, that being said, prior to this, there was really no study that carefully looked at bed partners or other family members because the disease certainly can impact the family as well as the patient.
Right, absolutely. And can you share your findings? What did you find in terms of the relationship impact for spouses and partners?
Well, the presence of RLS in one person of a spousal situation predominantly really is a two-way street, okay? So first of all, as a lot of people could probably imagine, if your bed partner is keeping you awake, for example, by kicking, well, that's kind of annoying, okay? And there can be some resentment on the bed partners, the non-patient of the patient. Now, the flip side of that is it certainly is still worse for the patient. It's still worse for the person having the symptoms. And frequently they will feel that there is not much empathy from the bed partner or from the spouse regarding their own symptoms and the fact that they're getting even less sleep than the bed partner. So there can be, as you can imagine, some resentment on both sides, which is never very good for a relationship.
Right, absolutely. This is kind of a unique situation in terms of a sleep problem that affects your partner, because last week I spoke with an expert on snoring and the impact on the bed partner. Usually somebody isn't aware that they snore at night. And so it's kind of about somebody taking their partner's word for it, and there's sort of that conflict. In this situation, somebody is very much aware that they're experiencing restless leg syndrome because, like we just mentioned, there's the component of being awake and having that urge to move their legs before they fall asleep. So there's it's a very different dynamic, I would imagine, than a different type of disorder where the person isn't aware that they're doing it.
Correct. Yeah. Snoring is more of a one-way street. RLS, definitely a two-way street. Not only, does it affect the patient directly, but historically RLS has been somewhat trivialized, occasionally mocked. So patients sometimes resent the fact that society in general doesn't take the disease very seriously. And if your loved ones start to fall into that category as well, that could be particularly problematic.
Right. And did you look at the effects of a patient seeking treatment and whether some of these resentments or relationship impacts were resolved if the disorder was treated or at least mitigated?
Well, there are a number of treatments for restless leg syndrome. And we looked at that in a cursory fashion by the nature of these sort of surveys. You tend to get people that have not done as well with treatments because they're more prone or more likely to answer these questionnaires. But certainly there was not a lot of satisfaction with the treatments for RLS in this population. A common scenario is that the medications will work for several years and then stop working. And sometimes the medicines that we use for RLS, which were largely invented for Parkinson's disease, they're dopamine medicines. I want to emphasize RLS is not Parkinson's disease, although we use the same medicines. Often these medicines will work very well for a little while, but over months or years, they start to lose their effect. And sometimes they even make the baseline symptoms worse than they were before they ever started them. There are other medications that are used that are not dopamine medications. These are medicines that are sometimes used for chronic pain conditions, which work reasonably well. And then we sometimes use even opioid medicines, which can work very, very well, but in this day and age are very difficult to use on a chronic basis with quite a bit of pushback against using opioid medicines chronically. The final major treatment that we use is iron. The main abnormality, if you do an autopsy on someone with restless legs, is reduced brain iron. And sometimes giving very high doses of iron by vein can be effective. Taking iron pills is okay. There's no objection to that, but it probably doesn't increase your iron that much, whereas giving iron by vein can markedly increase your iron. So there are a number of different treatment options. But no two people are the same, and the results of these treatments do change over time.
Okay, and can you talk about some lifestyle modifications as well? I know that exercise, for example, can be something that is discussed in terms of treatment for RLS, but I've heard and seen different things. I've seen that strenuous exercise in the evening can make symptoms worse. I've also seen that regular exercise is an important component of managing symptoms. Can you kind of help sort that out a little bit?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can definitively sort it out, but many of the things that are kind of knee-jerk recommendations, I might say, for sleep issues do not apply to RLS, because things that make you more relaxed and in normal people help with sleep actually can sometimes make the RLS worse, okay? So being relaxed and sedentary can actually make the RLS worse while you're having it. Things like strenuous exercise during the day, which I certainly would advocate for as a general health recommendation. But if it makes you more relaxed and tired at night, which it often does, it actually even can worsen the restless leg syndrome. So again, many of the general recommendations for a good night's sleep actually don't seem to work quite as well with restless legs. So I don't think we have good lifestyle issues that clearly improve it. Now, there are certainly things that people do. For example, you know, patients with bad RLS sometimes work the night shift. So they're up and moving around at night when they typically would have worse RLS symptoms. So there are things that people do. Very frequently, they will try to exercise right before bed or maybe take like hot baths right before bed, because the sensory stimulation and the exercise will make the RLS feel better for a little while. But after, you know, an hour or two later, if anything else, it might even make it worse. So again, exercise, lifestyle issues are always recommended from a general health standpoint, but may not have as much improvement in RLS per se.
Right. And what about magnesium? That's something that's really popular right now as something that's getting more attention as a way to relax the muscles. Does that have any impact on RLS?
Yeah, magnesium has been touted as a muscle relaxant for a number of years because it competes with calcium, which triggers muscle contraction. There's actually very little scientific study on magnesium. There was one study against a sugar pill, which didn't show any benefit in restless legs. Anecdotally, my patients, which tend to be very, very severe, RLS patients have usually tried and failed magnesium. It's extremely safe. It's extremely cheap. It has essentially no side effects. I certainly don't have problems with people trying it, but I think in more severe RLS, it's generally not going to be satisfactory.
Okay, got it. And so continuing on with the treatments, what's kind of the first line treatment or the first thing that you would generally try with someone who is first just starting the process of treating RLS? Or is there a kind of a one first line treatment that's recommended?
No, I'm not sure if I would say there's a definitive first line treatment. The first thing that we would do is check iron studies, okay? Now, the abnormality in RLS is reduced brain iron, and you can't really assess brain iron. But if they are systemically iron deficient, we would certainly try to aggressively treat with iron. And again, pills are okay, but more and more often we give iron by vein, which is like taking pills for 20 years in a single day. Of the results that you can get. So there are some patients that all we try to do is the intravenous iron, and results vary. Some people do notice a marked benefit, others not so much. But if you're iron deficient, you certainly want to treat that. So that's the one thing that I think is across the board that we would recommend. Assuming they need pharmacologic intervention, there are, again, several different classes of medicines. The dopamine medicines were the first ones that were FDA approved. This is ropinirole, pramipexole, retigotine. And then the other medicine that's FDA approved is called Horizont, which is a type of gabapentin. Gabapentin is a drug that's been around for a long time. And Horizont is more effective. It gets absorbed better, more potent. But at the end of the day, it's very, very similar. Another common medicine is pregabalin, which was marketed as Lyrica. So that's another common medicine a lot of people have heard of. So there's that group of medicines that are like gabapentin. They work a different way, maybe a little less specific, okay? They treat pain and abnormal sensations in general, but that's the other common group of medicines. So most people would say either a dopamine medicine or the gabapentin type medicine would be the first line treatment. The pendulum is sort of swinging towards the gabapentin medications these days because they don't seem to have the long-term problems that the dopamine medicines have in some people, where they actually seem to worsen the symptoms over years, the baseline symptoms. But again, in any one person, one class of drugs may work better or worse than the other.
All right, thank you. And we're really talking about treatments for RLS. Can it be cured, or do people just continue treating it for their lifetime?
Cure is a tricky word, okay? when we don't know exactly what's going on in the brain, it's hard to say that you've reversed that situation. We certainly have people after high-dose intravenous iron that no longer have symptoms. If you want to call that a cure, then sure, sometimes. But, you know, 3 years from now, it may come back. So it certainly is a condition that can wax and wane a little bit. There is some evidence that in older life, like in the 80s, 85, 90, that RLS may improve somewhat. That's a hard thing to prove or disprove scientifically. But the rationale for that is as we get older, after about age 75, 80, the brain iron starts to go up. And this is everyone, okay? And that's normally thought to be a bad thing, but in RLS, it may be a good thing for some people. So there is some hope, you know, when you hit 80 or so that there may be some general improvement, but in any one person, you just can't predict this.
Okay, got it. Thank you. I understand that you did another patient odyssey survey in the fall of 2020. What can you share about that?
Oh, not too much. this was actually even larger and much more extensive. We asked more of the sort of scientific questionnaires that we would ask in a traditional study and more detailed information about treatment and how it affects their life. It was a larger survey, about twice as many people. So I guess what I can say is there's nothing that really contradicts the initial survey. There's no doubt that RLS significantly impacts people's life. It significantly affects the lives of family members and loved ones and patients with RLS. And patients generally, have some benefit from treatments, but overall, they're still looking for for better options.
Right, thank you. So what's your recommendation for someone with RLS who knows that their condition is impacting their partner, they're having those discussions, there's that resentment building. What's your recommendation for them?
Well, I'm not much of a family counselor, I'm afraid. I think just discussing it in general is always the best way. A dialogue where the person with the patient uninterrupted states their feelings about it and what they would hope that their loved one could reciprocate, and also the bed partner or the loved one has their chance uninterrupted to discuss how the RLS impacts them and their perspective on the matter. So just good communication about the topic is really the main recommendation.
Right. And then, of course, I would think just seeking treatment, right? That if the partner with RLS is seeking treatment, it sounds like treatment can be a stop and start kind of thing where there's some successes and maybe some things that don't work as well. But as long as one person is working on it, then at least I think that would go a long way.
Yeah, correct. I mean, there are some people that are reluctant to, you know, take a prescription medicine for anything, and they certainly have their arguments. Again, overall, I think we have better treatments for restless legs than most neurologic conditions. Now, it may take some expertise, and certainly things change over time. It's pretty rare to have someone on the same treatment for 10 years, okay, at the same dose at the same time. You do have to manipulate these things. Some physicians have more expertise than others when it comes to, you know, as the disease progresses. But generally, there are treatments out there.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. So can you share a little bit about the RLS Foundation and why you choose to be involved there?
Yeah, sure. The RLS Foundation is a 503c organization dedicated to advancing the interests of patients with restless leg syndrome. I think they do a very good job on many different levels. They're quite good, again, for just pure patient advocacy. They're quite good as a forum for patients to discuss things amongst themselves. And over the last 10 years or so, they've also been quite good at raising enough money to help to donate to research in restless leg syndrome. Because historically, there really hasn't been a lot of funding for RLS research. And many of the projects that later came to fruition actually were started with small grants from the RLSF. So I think overall, it's a great organization to be part of.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm glad that I found it. Where can people learn more about you and your work?
Well, I'm in Houston. I'm not sure about my work. If you Google, I guess some of this stuff will pop up. We right. do see patients, quite a few patients with restless legs. So we're always happy to schedule more if needed. But the RLSF, I think, actually does have some nice repository of ongoing and a history of research in restless leg syndrome.
It does, yes. And I will post a link to the study that we've been talking about in the show notes so folks can access that if they want to.
Okay, great.
Well, thank you so much for sharing with us today. I really appreciate it, and I think it's going to be really helpful.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
It's the Sleep Well, Stay Well podcast, now you know. Thanks for checking out the show.